Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello there, movie truthers. It's Michael Leader here, broadcasting from quite a unique situation. We hope you're keeping safe out there. I'm here talking across the interwebs with head honcho of Little White Lies, David Jenkins.
Hey there.
So we thought we'd do something a little different here, seeing as we're in this unique lockdown situation where cinemas up and down the country and worldwide are closed and films aren't receiving the usual theatrical push. We thought we'd still talk about films, but when we have been at home with our families, one thing that the two of us have in common, other than films and Little White Lies and Truth and Movies, is that we're both recent-ish dads. We've been thinking about the future of cinema for our kids. Will we be able to take them to the cinemas? What sort of films will they see in the future in their lives? Should we start by, not necessarily introducing by name, but introducing our kids? How old is your little one now?
So my little one, Ivy, is 20 months. She's kind of getting to the point of talking, and she's very much walking and running around and making lots of noise now. She's, you know, I think she is at a point where she's kind of showing quite visible emotional responses to art, such as literature and TV at this time. I think that there has been, the kernel of that thought of, you know, when would be the right time to take her to see a movie in the proper place. It's a weird one, because I think, like, I'm quite a sort of, if I sit down to a movie, I want to watch the movie. and I've got that kind of, like, even if it is like some terrible, like, you know, sequel or, you know, The Nut Job or something like that, I'm going to want to engage with the film and not have to, like, keep walking out in and out again this is an awful way to start things off, really, isn't it? To sort of, like, admit to my own selfishness when it comes to watching movies. But, you know, it's just the way it is. What about yourself?
So, Ivo, it's very interesting. We have Ivy and Ivo here as the two Truth and Movies kids. Ivo is 18 months, almost to the day, as we're recording this. And, yeah, similar to what you said, he's starting to really get a sort of emotional connection with certain characters and objects and themes. But he's not yet taken to films. He was a bit of a hyperactive kid, so we never tried the whole parent and baby film screening shebang, as some of our parent friends have. But he does like to watch quite a bit of CBeebies and is developing a relationship with certain shows that fall in and out of favour. We've gone through a few refreshes of his taste so far, and he really does have quite a taste and a connection with certain characters and certain shows. Right now, the two shows that are very much in vogue are Waffle the Wonder Dog,
which is just to give some wider information to our listeners, is a pretty much a talking dog, live action talking dog show. It's not dissimilar to something that I remember from my youth called Woof.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah,
we should also say that the Waffle the Wonder Dog is voiced by Rufus Hound.
Ah, there you go.
I wonder if that was just the pitch that they sent to CBeebies and they just gave it the stamp. He also, Ivo, like I think all children of the last 15 years, is now very much into Mr. Tumble and Justin Fletcher, who plays Mr. Tumble, his extended universe of characters and shows. He really has a stranglehold on the CBeebies commissioners by the looks of it.
He really does. It's a bit like that bit in Gremlins 2 where the Gremlins take over the TV station and you switch the channels and it's Gremlins doing everything. But yeah, Justin Fletcher is kind of like the big dog on CBeebies and seems to... Not only does he have like four or five shows, but on those shows, he'll play every character on the show. So he's getting a nice bit of screen time. I've got to say, Ivy's not quite succumbed to Justin yet. She definitely prefers anything animated. It's quite hard to actually get her to retain focus on anything live action, and unless she's really tired.
Okay.
So yeah. What have you? So yeah, Ivy did go to some parent and baby screenings, mm-hmm. Although not with myself, with my wife during maternity leave, and I believe the first film she ever saw in that sense was that film A Simple Favor.
Oh, Blake Lively?
The one with Blake Lively in it and Anna Kendrick, which I've still not seen, so she's got one up on me. So it's on Netflix, so hopefully I can catch up with that. And
then you can talk to your child.
We can talk to her, talk about it, pick it apart.
So have you tried to show a film at home to Ivy? We've tried with Ivo, not strong-arming him into doing it, but we might make one day think, oh, we'll put on a Wallace and Gromit short film, or My Neighbor Totoro, or The Lion King, once we were messing about on Disney Plus with the free trial and thought we'd try that. And he was bored. He wasn't at all engaged. Have you tried that with Ivy?
Yeah, so we've kind of watched two films so far, but in chunks. The first one was My Neighbor Totoro, which we watched in about three chunks. Mm-hmm. The first time we actually sat down to watch it must have been about four months ago, and she watched for about 40 minutes, and I was really like, oh my god, it was like a kind of, you know, a sprinter who'd like been entered into a marathon race, and you're watching her go, and you're thinking, oh my god, she's gonna do this, and then just all of a sudden it just fell flat and ran out of the room for because she'd seen a bee or something. But like, mm-hmm. you know, it's it was, you know, she was far more engaged than I had anticipated she would be, and then getting through the next two segments was slightly tougher because yeah, she was just a bit restless. Basically, she's also she also has these kind of obsessions with you know, CBeebies programs. There's one called Bing, which she's in very, very fond of, which is about this little animated bunny rabbit who has this kind of ragdoll carer, and each episode something bad happens to the rabbit and he learns a lesson as to why it's not bad and actually it can be turned into something good, and it's very kind of sweet and moralistic. But we basically get to a point in most viewing of anything, or especially when me and Kate are trying to watch something and she's in the room, which is very rare now. Like, you know, we were watching the you know, Boris Johnson updates on BBC, and she was just screaming Bing, Bing, Bing at the TV. So, you know, and that is what happened when we were watching Totoro. She just gets to a point where she remembers Bing, and she's not really shouting. She just says Bing, 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 in this really kind of like irritating way, and endearingly irritating. So yeah, we tend to have to switch over. And she's really into cats. Like whenever we're out and we see a cat, she goes bananas. Mm-hmm. And if she's not in her buggy, she'll instantly run after it, and it will obviously run away. But she, I thought the Cat Returns, the Studio Ghibli, uh-huh. slightly one of the lesser known titles. It was 75 minutes. It was cats, and I thought surely if we're going to get through a feature, this is going to be the one. And no, it took about four sort of 20-minute chunks to get through it, and she really wasn't that in. I was far more interested in it than she was, to be honest. So yeah, we're not there yet, but
it makes me think that there's just something in the signal for CBeebies that delights these kids.
It's got a kind of
you literally turn the channel and it's gone, the interest. Not that, it's a controversial thing to talk about between parents, which is screen time and something that there's some stigma around. But, it's one of many things that Ivo is very excited about is the TV. He also will spend 45 minutes washing his hands or staring out the window, which are two very COVID-19 era pastimes.
Wow.
He'll say window, and then there's a little chest we have where the vacuum cleaner and other household kind of like objects are in, and he can step on it and just at perfect height to look out of a window, and he's staring across at this lady that's working from home across the way, and he'll just shout "lady" at her, which must be going very well for her when she's doing her video conferences. But there's just something about CBeebies, and I'm sure that to non-parents we sound like absolute cultists when we talk about all these shows, but they're done to such a high standard.
I totally agree. I mean, one of the things that it's worth saying is that when I talk about CBeebies, and obviously my audience is limited, and I'm assuming, as Ivy does with most feature films, our listeners are probably tuning out right now to go and listen to something proper. But CBeebies is, like, for me, the greatest TV station ever. It's perfect. And the show, like, if any other channel had as high a quality broadcasting that was so perfectly attuned to its audience as CBeebies, I'd watch so much more TV. Mm-hmm. They've really kind of, the way that they've picked and curated the shows on it. I mean, there are obviously some duffers, but I mean, there's an animated shorter version of Peter Rabbit, which I absolutely hate. Like, I mean, I really, really hate it. And it's kind of to the point, but I think my hatred is emphasized by the fact that everything else on it is so, has kind of some intrinsic value to it. Whereas this seems like some really poor knockoff. I mean, it's obviously like, I think it's 10 years old and they're still chucking out reruns of it. So, but yeah, that's probably the one thing that is terrible. But yeah, no, I do think that, like, it's kind of understandable that kids, of that age would, want to be watching CBeebies as much as physically possible, really.
So that's our kids now. Are you counting down the days until you can show Ivy certain films?
You know what? I think maybe before she was born, and maybe even before I even knew I was going to have a kid, or even maybe before I even wanted to have a kid, I think you do sort of fantasize about, like, having this little person that you can kind of mold in your image, and you can you kind of think that the sort of joy of parenthood is the ability to kind of proffer your taste and the things you love down the generational line. And I think as soon as she was born, I totally forgot about that. And the idea of that now just seems like completely ridiculous. And the idea that I could influence her in any way, especially, but obviously she's way too young to really kind of be influenced in any meaningful way, but I am someone who, like, hates the idea of, like, algorithms of things telling you what to watch and things being put in front of your face, and I'm like completely about sort of self-discovery. And if to the point where if she decides she doesn't ever want to watch films, they're not of interest, she wants to do something completely different, she wants to do, like, crochet, that's fine. I mean, like, I want her to just have her own decision, and you know, it would not be at all heartbreaking or troubling to me if she couldn't watch, if she didn't want to watch films, because you know, that's her, that would be her decision. But mm-hmm. You know, there's obviously, like, you know, but count, if she does happen to be into films and, you know, wanting to watch stuff that I'm watching, or takes an interest in my work and what I want to do in my leisure time, then yeah, there's definitely stuff that I'd want to kind of, like, you know, I think that in my grandfather was quite kind of instrumental in, not instrumental, but he was a part of my kind of sort of plant, sowing the seeds of my kind of love of movies, and he would show us like Laurel and Hardy and Buster Keaton and the Marx Brothers, which he sort of taped off the TV or bought on these really kind of dodgy VHS copies off of like market stalls, and basically when we would go to visit him, we loved going to visit him because we knew that we would get to see Laurel and Hardy.
Mm.
And there was, and that was like definitely for me the first memory of like me and my younger brother like rolling on the floor crying with laughter. It was specifically the film Way Out West. Right. And I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a kind of Laurel and Hardy cowboy pastiche film, and it's still really amazingly funny. But there's a sequence in the end where Oliver Hardy's head he's stuck in a basement and his head is poking up through the floor, and he's shouting to Stan Laurel, do something to help, and Stan Laurel puts a bucket over his head first and kicks it, or someone else accidentally kicks it, and that's funny firstly. But then they have this kind of like elastic, like they eventually get him free by lifting his head right up, and it kind of twangs back down.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember me and my brother absolutely like gasping for air with laughter at that, and you know, I do, yeah. I feel I would want to show. I purposely have a DVD of Way Out West in my kind of personal archive, ready for such a moment. But you know, whether you know, now in the go-go tens, the go-go 20s, right, she'd want to be watching like black and white DVDs, or whether DVD players will even exist. Who, you know?
Well, that's something. A few years ago, maybe it was when Hugo came out, I remember when Martin Scorsese was on the interviews trail, he was talking about his daughter, who's now the teenage daughter who posts all of the pictures of him larking about the house. She would have been quite young. And he said that he had a curated program of film culture for her and her friends. They'd come round to his private cinema and they'd ask questions like, do they talk in this film? Because they were so used to silent films, and they'd watched Jacques Tati and Laurel and Hardy and been brought up through great silent comic performances before then Disney, and all mixed together. And I don't know, I'm not really prepared to do that for Ivo. I think what is exciting to me is seeing which directions he'll go in. And I think back, similar to what you're doing, I'm thinking back to the key important moments in my life in terms of first cinema trips, important films I remember watching with my family. It wasn't necessarily ever, we're going to watch this, sit down now. It was more that it was something was on or some film was out and I happened to join them. When you're talking about watching films on TV with grandparents, I remember my granddad was a huge fan of Gene Hackman. And he would say, and Nick Nolte. Nick Nolte before he became the terrifying ogre monster he became later in life. Like, the real sort of solid blokes.
48 Hours era.
Sort of, you know, guys who got stuff done. Yeah. The sort of 80s cops. And one of my granddad's favourite films from that sort of 70s, 80s era was French Connection 2. Not a well-liked film. But one way said he thinks Hackman pushed him. He's not necessarily a guy who was very into the film craft or the world of Hollywood, but he loved actors that sort of pushed themselves into some sort of real sort of energy of manliness. And I remember my parents would go out maybe on a Saturday evening and end up having tea at my gran and granddad's and staying there till late, and they just let me stay up and watch whatever the late night film on ITV was with them, and that was so important as a young kid. And then likewise, my dad would let me sit with him and say, there's this great film on called Jackie Brown, let's watch it on Sky. One of the first international films I remember watching is a Sui Hark film called Time and Tide from 2000, yeah, which hasn't had its like resurgence or reappraisal on Twitter or Letterboxd yet. But I remember my dad watching that late night on some Sky channel, whether it was an actual Sky Movies channel or not, and said, come and sit down and watch this. This is really interesting and different. So just as much being taken to see things, not just as much, you know, as prescribed viewing, but just because it was out in the ether.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What was the first film your parents or family took you to see at the cinema, David?
Well, this is interesting because I was chatting to them today to try and confirm this, because I've always had my suspicion. But I put it to them and they thought back and they actually ended up agreeing with me. So I think the first film I ever saw at the cinema was Bambi, and that was re-released in March of 1986. So
okay,
in the UK, so it would have been around that time. So I would have been about 5 when I saw that, and I think that's the okay. first film I actually have a memory of seeing. I actually don't believe I've ever seen it since. So it's been like the best part of 35 years since I've seen Bambi. But weirdly, I still, you know, if people would make a joke, an in-joke about Bambi, I'd still get it, because obviously it's this mm-hmm. renowned text. I've got a memory of ice skating and Thumper the rabbit, but yeah, otherwise very indistinct. But the film that I think, hold on, I wrote a quick list out actually. So yeah, I went to, the same year I remember going to see Basil the Great Mouse Detective as well.
Right,
which was another yeah. kind of cartoon, non-Disney, I believe. Actually, no, maybe it was Disney.
No, it's Disney. It's just before the Renaissance.
Yeah. And then I was looking for first live-action films, and it's either Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which was 89, or actually, I think it's Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is kind of like quite live action, but not quite animation. Well, it's both, obviously, hybrid. But that was a film that I remember seeing and really thinking, like, like going through the gamut of emotions and feeling like laughing and feeling like I was experiencing something completely new, and also being like, I really, really got amazingly scared by the finale when Christopher Lloyd,
oh yeah,
basically is revealed to be a spoiler, a toon, and and he's doing all these things. Like, there was one scene in particular where he his hand transforms into a circular saw, which actually built within me a mortal fear of circular saws for quite a long time. But yeah, Bambi, and it was, I think it was at my local cinema, which was the Enfield Canon, which I think it later became the Enfield ABC, and then probably in about the mid-late 90s it was bulldozed and turned into a Tesco. That was also the site of my first 15,
many years later,
which was it's worth mentioning because it's quite apropos, which is Outbreak.
Okay,
so my dad snuck me into Outbreak at the Enfield Canon, and I'm hoping, you know, that the only reason I'm hoping that movie certificates are still around in the future is that so I can sneak Ivy into you know, something she actually wants to watch, you know.
I think my first 15 was The Matrix, and that was my dad after school on a Friday saying, let's go to the cinema, I hear this film is really good. And likewise, I should probably check with my parents, but one of the very first films I saw at the cinema, and I would have been quite young, was Ghostbusters 2, which was 89. And I would have been most three. And it scarred me for life because I was absolutely traumatized by the Prince Vigo character.
Oh, yeah.
As voiced, uncredited, by Max von Sydow.
Yeah, yeah.
Rest in peace.
I definitely also saw Ghostbusters 2 in the cinema.
I was so scared by that character that I think at the time I was really into Ghostbusters, the animated series, the toys and everything, that I had the Ladybird kids novelization of the book, and my parents had to cut out the face of Prince Vigo whenever he appeared because I was so scared. I suppose serves us all right to take such a young child to see a film that's a bit scary. But I think of some really landmark films early on that I saw. I loved Wayne's World. I remember seeing Wayne's World twice at the cinema. That's a few years later, but I still would have been five or six by that point.
What we're doing here is, I mean, I guess if at this point we should, if we're doing like film recommendations, if the listeners have tuned in to actually listen to discover some new things that they should watch, we'd probably recommend at this point that you watch the Victor Erice film Spirit of the Beehive, which is basically a film about everything we've been talking about so far.
About
except CBeebies.
Doesn't have Christopher Lloyd as a half cartoon judge in it though.
But conceptually and spiritually, it's about kind of youth's first interaction with fantasy and cinema and how that goes down.
And is it Frankenstein in that film?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a long time since I watched that film. That's a good recommendation, David.
But yeah, I think, you know, I think one of the reasons why I think this conversation is worth having, and hopefully, you know, not too self-indulgent, you know, is that I think that the thoughts of like the future of cinema and what cinemas are going to look like in the years to come, and whether, you know, whether physical buildings and the kind of time-honoured old-school picture palace-type places with dirty floors and that smell a bit and have horrible toilets and overpriced food and all those things we kind of love to hate are still going to be around. And whether we... Because, you know, I feel that, like, one, you know, obviously one of the advantages of like streaming and video on demand is that, you know, it's easy and it's always there, and not only like you can you know, people say binging on it, but I always feel the better word would be gorging on it, because mm-hmm. it is like kind of a buffet that you can just keep, you know, you can just in very quick succession you can go and eat lots and lots and lots and lots, whereas like, you know, the cinema is definitely a more focused and refined, and it's like giving your time and energy over to a single thing that you kind of make almost a kind of, you know, ceremony out of. And I think that that's more important than maybe the films, is the sort of sense of occasion and the ceremony and the idea of like, you know, taking her somewhere to see something and then hopefully engaging in a conversation and about the film and whether she liked it or not. I think I'm really excited to hear the first time when she basically does engage in some kind of like basic critical discourse about something, because, you know, obviously now she you know, when she's watching it's kind of easy to sort of deduce when she's like something, when she's bored or, you know, wants to turn over. But I've yet to, you know, obviously yet to hear the whys about, mm-hmm. and, you know, hear some kind of reason for it. But, you know, I guess, I mean, will you be sad if there's no more cinemas to take Ivo to?
That's such an interesting question, isn't it? And such an almost science fiction question about what the future could be, because we also need to make sure that the films exist as well as the cinemas themselves. And, you know, so many people around our age and maybe 5 years either side, their first trips to the cinema were either a new Disney film or a re-release of a Disney film. The Jungle Book one in the early 90s seeming to be a very popular one with many of our contributors and listeners. And I wonder whether it will just be... Is there that sense of occasion anymore to any new product from the Disney empire? The kids' first Star Wars prequel, sequel, spin-off. Is it, have we lost that now, that sense of magic? Maybe not. Maybe we'll somehow find that again. But right now, it's really hard to pontificate on, in a way.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's an interesting time, and, you know, I think that we live in hope that this situation doesn't lead too many people or businesses to make rash decisions about their what they do. And obviously, like, yeah, I don't doubt that cinema is going to come back, and that those buildings are going to be full of people again, mm-hmm. and that once this is over, I mean, you know, the big hope is that actually people relish them even more, because, you know, having been at home for a couple of months and not being able to indulge any of that stuff will, you know, absence will make the heart grow fonder, and people will take that stuff up even more so. And, you know, I definitely, I mean, I think I was already thinking about whether, because we get, because we're, you know, of the sort of the critical set, you know, all those cool guys who get invites to see film screenings and whatnot. We tend to get thing, one of the sort of regular mail outs that we'll get is a Saturday Sunday morning job, usually about film starts at about 10, but you arrive there at like 8, and there is like fun in the foyer, they call it, where you have like face painting and pictures and sweets and pop and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of create this whole adventure play morning out of it, and then, you know, then you kind of go and watch Sonic the Hedgehog and weep, but weep as your young child is, you know, obviously in thrall of the awfulness. And I was definitely thinking, I can't remember what the film was, but something like maybe a week before the shutdown, I got an invite where I thought, what the hell, I'm gonna take Ivy to that on a weekend, and I'm just gonna try it, because it was one of those things. It was like, I think it might have been Trolls World Tour,
which is coming straight to streaming, right? So you could always do that at home, and then we could record a special Truth and Movies right afterwards.
I could, yeah. But no, we could. I was definitely thinking of lugging her along to Trolls World Tour and just to see as a kind of experiment thing. If she'd lasted half an hour and just could not hack it anymore, fine. Even if we'd have got in the room and it would have been too loud or too dark, fine. It would have just been a fun thing to know, but
you know, I'm so anxious when I take any friends to see a film, and I'm looking over my shoulder. Are they enjoying it? Are they bored? Are they switching off? Taking an infant who might just start crying or just look at you and say, "Can we leave now?" 10 minutes into a film, it's just the stakes are too high.
That's interesting, because there's definitely I definitely have a memory of when my dad would take us to see movies, and like things that we perhaps wanted to see more than him. One specific one was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and me and my brother loved it, and he absolutely hated it, and he endured it for us. And then, but was very much not holding back when we kind of got to the car and started to and sort of plucked up the courage to ask him what he thought, and then he gave it both barrels, and that was a strange but memorable time, but understandable having recently rewatched Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I suppose to wrap up, do we have any recommendations if any stir crazy parents have kids of certain ages that they want to switch on to some world cinema, some classic cinema, anything that you'd recommend, David?
Well, I can only really recommend things that I'm maybe thinking of showing to Ivy. The one thing that I was thinking of was that it's a short film called The Red Balloon.
Oh yes.
About a little kid walking around Paris following a red balloon around, and there's something quite sort of calming and zen and unique about it, and it's only 36 minutes as well, so I think you could get, you know, you could quite easily get through it. Otherwise, you know, if there, I don't know, I almost feel that like Mr. Tumble is only a couple of increments away from like Laurel and Hardy and Chaplin and stuff like that. I mean, you know.
Well, you say that. I watched. This is how deep I've gone into Justin Fletcher. I watched an interview with him where he said that he learnt the art of slapstick from a guy that was in the touring company with Laurel and Hardy. He's been Justin Fletcher really knows his stuff and is from that tradition. And actually, the formats that he puts on CBeebies are what if the Fast Show was made for kids? So it's almost introducing them into a whole new world of television formats.
To the point where I actually think some of his characters could be actionable. There is a clear infringement on the Scousers from Harry Enfield, mm-hmm. There's another one as well. There's a couple. It's very Fast Show, and it's Fast Show and Harry Enfield as kind of filtered through, kind of weird end of the pier, 50s music hall vibe. Maybe what would be a Chaplin short film, one of his kind of shorts, that like slightly kind of later period shorts that are more kind of the early ones are mad, uh-huh. But like the Chaplin or Laurel and Hardy as well. Laurel and Hardy, in fact, this is it. There's a Laurel and Hardy film called The Music Box,
okay.
Which is another absolute childhood favourite. It's only like 20 minutes, and it's a kind of sketch where Laurel and Hardy, delivery men, and they have to take a piano up a long flight of stairs. And that's pretty much it. And it's really hilariously funny. And I think any person of any age would dig it. What about you?
Well, this is the thing. It's been a long time since I was a kid, and most of my family, cousins and so on, are around my age. So it's been a long time since I've sat and watched films with children. What I'm hearing, because I host this podcast, Ghibli Attack, about Studio Ghibli, is a lot of parents discovering the films of Studio Ghibli with their kids now they're on Netflix. So, of course, everyone looks to My Neighbor Totoro, but then Spirited Away for maybe kids of 10 or around there. But films like Kiki's Delivery Service, Ponyo, the more whimsical adventures that do skew younger, I think they're perfect to watch. Even if they are a little bit quite experimental in a way to our eyes because of the very particular worldview of Hayao Miyazaki and his way of seeding those themes into otherwise quite innocuous family entertainment. And then you broaden out into some of the best of world animation. I love Cartoon Saloon, the Irish animators who did The Secret of Kells, Song of the Sea. One of my favourite cinema experiences was going to see Song of the Sea, and the lights came up at the end, and there was a mum and her maybe 7 or 8 year old daughter who was just absolutely loving, you know, saying she thought it was the best film she'd ever seen. And it's a beautiful, emotional film. Maybe not so much their film The Breadwinner, which is a bit more of an issues political film.
I really like that film, actually, The Breadwinner.
It's a bit more complicated.
For sort of tweens mm-hmm. rather than young kids.
But this is probably where we can throw to listeners who maybe have seen the future for us. They've got kids of slightly older ages that they've managed to turn on to films, what their responses are. And I'd love to hear about that. Just some...
Same.
Some playbook.
I would love to hear if something completely random like, I chucked on some Stan Brakhage, and my 2 year old was absolutely enthralled by it. I wonder if people if really young kids would love Adam Sandler or Chris Farley as well,
right?
Those kind of loud, brash 90s, 80s comedians who just fall on the floor a lot and scream, and I feel that could have a connection with very, very young kids. I don't mean that in a kind of entirely negative way.
Well, I do wonder if anyone's tried out sort of documentary cinema, but sort of maybe like Night Mail, that classic train-based documentary. Yeah. Ivo's getting very into trains, and now you go on YouTube and you can find 48 hours looped train footage and just have that on, and we have aquariums that we can look at as well, or these live feeds of zoos. And I wonder whether you can find, I don't know, a Frederick Wiseman type slow documentary just where you can soak in the details of a space that could delight some kids. That might be a little bit off-piste maybe, but I do wonder if anyone's tried that and succeeded.
That listeners, let us know. If you've made it this far, let us know.
And well, listeners, thank you for sticking with us if you have made it this far. This is a bit of an experiment into what Truth and Movies could be remotely. These late night fireside chats over a video conference. David, thanks for chatting with me. The inaugural dad pod.
Yep. one of one so far.
Thanks for listening. Stay safe.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.